woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen, Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 875, NASDAQ Futures up 50. We continue to creep higher here. Just kind of no surprise, given what the Fed is doing. But that's another story for another day. We have Mr. Lou.
Happy 818,000 phony jobs Thursday.
You know, the weird part of that, Lou, is that's the end date of that was last March. Not now. It was a year from April to March.
Yep. How many more phony jobs do you think they've reported since then?
As a regular contributor to Stocks and Jacks, you know that we constantly, or I do, constantly point out that the numbers of the establishment survey are like 2.5 to 3 million in the last 12 months, and the numbers in the household survey are like 50,000. Now, if you believe the boat of them, as they say in the South Side, the only explanation is that people are getting second jobs, because that's how the two are tabulated differently. Household survey, if you have two jobs, you're counted as one. The establishment survey, if you have two jobs, are counted as two. The third explanation would be the establishment jobs. There's not as many of those that they think. There's also something called the birth and death, which sounds awful, but... for instance, Lou, if you and I, and we'll let Greg into business, we're going to start building 10 houses, and we hire 20 guys to help us build the 10 houses, and we don't send them we pay them, but they're not employees. We give them you know more about this than I do. We give them a 1099 at the end of the year.
Yeah, we consider them to be independent contractors.
But the government doesn't know they're employed until they essentially get their tax return in January, wherever the hell they get it. So there are people in Washington who estimate whether that part of the world that they can't pick up on a weekly basis, like you can with a paycheck from ADP, is growing or not growing. And it's been my contention, you know, forever, that when the economy is growing pretty strongly, it's actually growing a lot more strongly than the numbers indicate, because all these kinds of people, all these, I won't say temporaries, but contracting people, are all being hired. And then when the economy goes the other way, it's actually a lot worse, because all these people are getting laid off and nobody knows they are, because they're not counted on a weekly basis. So those are kind of the three possibilities.
How about this possibility? These numbers were deliberately inflated in an effort to try to make President Biden's campaign or re-election campaign look better.
Well, I mean, like I said, the numbers are from February to March. They're last year. They're not like the last 3 months.
But this, what do you think? This is not an ongoing process?
I think there was 1 year, Lou, back. It was before COVID. We actually were in a damn near a full-fledged recession. And I think this is when Obama was in office. Either Obama, yes, or Bush, one of the two.
It was Obama when they were trying to change the, well, they changed the definition of recession for Biden too, but they were trying to rewrite the definition of recession under Obama.
They came out with a number that said the birth death index showed massive amounts of businesses starting up, when in fact, when the economy was in such bad shape at the time, they weren't starting up. Somebody just screwed up the estimate. But you, I mean, you don't. Nobody knows if you and I open up a hamburger stand tomorrow.
No. It has to be reflected. It'll be reflected in the federal tax returns, or at least wherever the feds are drawing their data.
Yeah.
This number and the numbers like it that you and I have discussed smacks of malfeasance rather than misfeasance. And again, I suspect what we're seeing is the kind of estimates that you are discussing, but the people who are reporting them, the federal agencies who are required to report them, are wildly assuming, you know, beneficial results in one direction. That is the direction that favors the Democratic candidate. And that's what I assume happened.
Well, I'm going to turn this around to a question for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because it was I learned one hell of a lot being on the board of the CBOE. They were good people, but what goes on in a bureaucracy, which I never was sort of in before, I mean, Pullman was, but I was at the factory. There wasn't much bureaucracy there. Guys were just welding stuff. But you could tell stuff came on the agenda at the CBOE, and it was always was a... There was like a breeze. It was like the guy in... what did Claude Rains say? I go which way the wind blows, the wind's blowing from Vichy. It's exactly... You could just tell, even though nobody had to say anything, like you didn't go after if a big firm did something nasty on the trading floor, which a lot of them did, you never went after them. I mean, there was no poster to that effect. There was no rule. It was like a breeze going down the corridor. If you stuck your finger up and wet it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly what happened.
Well, my question to you is, though.
You have a federal bureaucracy.
Well, let me finish my question. You know, I'm ragging about the CPI all the time. I honestly don't think, Lou, and this is a question for you, that the schmucks like you and me that are actually out there finding the price of brown rice and the price of, you know, men's tuxedos, I don't think we're screwing with the numbers at all. I mean, at that level, someplace it goes somewhere, then it goes somewhere, then it goes somewhere. And where do you think, I use the term adjustment, takes place? I mean, where does somebody say medical care is 6.8% when it really is 20% of the economy? Is it? I can't believe it's a phone call to the White House. I mean,
This is much like the situation in Chicago that you just and what you just talked about with, you know, the breeze blowing. You don't. A federal workforce that tilts overwhelmingly in favor of one political party is not going to act in a way that's inimical to that party's interests. Now, if they are confronted with a black and white, you know, choice, then you might get an honest assessment. And this again is an unwritten rule. You don't have to push this. But they're not confronted with black and white choices, as you noted. There's lots of slippage. And when the slippage is, when you have thousands of people, again, who look at these numbers and say, you know, if I report this, it's going to make the guy that I want elected, you know, it's going to damage him. So I'm not going to make that assumption. I'm going to assume the other thing, which is going to make my guy look good. And you get the cumulative effect of tens of thousands of those decisions. And I mean, never mind the CBOE, you ought to try working in the Defense Department.
Oh, I can't imagine.
You know, where you see this kind of stuff routinely go on. Now, it gets a little balder there. I literally had people tell me, we can't, you know, we don't want that number reported, you know, on you know, whatever measure of efficiency we were dealing with. We don't want that number reported because it's going to make us look bad. Or it's going to make this general look bad, and we're all wedded to that general. But this is, you know, you don't. It's like the trash guys pulling up the yard signs in Chicago. You know, the political yard signs. Nobody has to tell them to do that. They just know that if those yard signs, if they can contribute in any way to helping their boy or girl get elected, then that's what they're going to do. And I as I said, this is malfeasance. This is not misfeasance. This is a concerted effort. And I mean, and if we ever had a picture of our ruling elites, it was Gina Raimondo last night during the Democratic National Convention reporting, when she's interviewed, and you know, this is her department. She's the Secretary of Commerce. This is her, you know, this is her bailiwick. And the interviewer says, well, you know, this was as far as I know the only question that has been raised in this story about, you know, more than 750,000 jobs being wrong or being reported as being created was wrong. It was not reported on any of the major news outlets. But they asked Gina Raimondo, what do you think about this report? And she goes, well, I don't believe it because I heard Donald Trump say that he's never said anything truthful. And she said, this is from the Department of Labor. And Raimondo goes, I don't know anything about that.
Well, I guess the answer I'm never going to get at anybody, because I don't think anybody knows.
Let them eat cake.
But how many, I guess this is a dumb question. How many desks, showing my age, how many desks are there between the person who gets the price of brown rice in the Oval Office? Now, the person, I'm going to guess that the person who gets the price around brown rice reports it correctly. Now it goes to somebody who does rice noodles and God knows what else. He's probably not going to change it either. At what level is it? It can't be the Secretary of Labor that says, oh, God, we can't. I'm asking, maybe it is. Is it? Who? Bureaucrats, after all, are bureaucrats.
I guarantee you, Tom, that the wherever where this is happening is wherever there is fuzziness, and wherever you've got fuzziness in that decision chain, where an assumption has to be made, a decision has to be made weighing one factor over another, that the decision is being made in favor of a Democrat candidate because that's the way the federal workforce skews. And if by some odd circumstance unfavorable news, like I said, a black and white choice has to be made, unfavorable news goes forward, it hits probably somewhere well below the Secretary of Labor or the Secretary of Commerce, and says, you know, and somebody says, we're not reporting that number. That number's not going anywhere.
Is this number that they came out with, and I don't know the answer to this, my question is, if you watch, we've had a couple people on the show, maybe Dan talks about it, or Carl does, that we seem to have a string of the number will be 300,000, and yet more often than not, it appears that the revision of the month or two before are always negative. Now, yep. I won't say always, but it seems like they're negative.
No, I'm unfamiliar with any positive number. The revisions for the last several years.
I've seen a couple, but not very often. Is this number supposed to be the 12-month total of all those revisions, or is it another 800,000? Whatever the hell.
I looked at it. I did not have a chance to look at the original report, but I looked at the reporting on it from several sources that I consider to be fairly reliable. And my assessment was this was in addition to those monthly revisions.
Really?
So yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's much more serious. It's much more serious.
Well, where do they come from then?
Well, that's the issue. That's why I say this looks like malfeasance. And I mean, the first thing I saw in one of my reporting channels was that these numbers are so bad and so inaccurate that they're going to cause the Fed to reassess its interest policy, because they've been basing it on an economy that, and a report of an economy that doesn't exist. And this,
where do you think,
I just raised the issue because this is endemic to our federal workforce and to a number of state workforces as well, but it's especially noticeable in the federal workforce.
Well, you had, I think it's endemic. I have the quote here from the as a poet once said, all lies and jest. Still, a man, he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. You know, I heard Trump's VP guy. What the hell's his name again? I'm like Mike Royko. I don't even want to know who these people are. Talking about how when Trump left office, the inflation rate was 1.4%. Lou, that's the big fattest lie that ever walked.
But what's it based on?
It's the CPI number, but in the same period of time, I won't say he did it. While he was in office, they blew the money supply up 40%, and he's going to blame it on Biden. Come on.
I'm just going to say, you know, we can point fingers in whatever direction you want, but what this number, this is a real number, and it's a real adjustment, and it's coming from an organization whose data are relied on by a number of other federal agencies to make crucial decisions, and this has been skewed. The point I'm making is, it's been skewed deliberately, and the other element that I was going to address, and I wanted to just make a note of, is that nobody cares.
I care.
Well, not nobody cares. The mainstream corporate media do not care. Fox is reporting it, and a couple of other.
Well, I'm very curious. I don't know who the hell we could ask. There is, you know, where's Carl when I need him? But there's the original number, Lou. Then there's the revision when they come out with which they just did, the July number. Okay, there's going to be a July headline number, the establishment survey, which is where you call up a bunch of people and say, how many people did you hire? Or how many people worked there last month? How many worked there this month? Now, how they do the survey and stuff, I have no idea. But there's also a revision then of the June number, and I think there's a second revision of the May number. So I'm just kind of curious, if you've got these revisions going back 90 days, if it's not a total of those revisions, which, by the way, could be pretty high, like you say, it always seems like revisions are going down, where would they even get people on top of those two revisions? I mean, there's a third survey going on? I don't know. I'm having trouble with the math here, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, okay. So the revisions have been, the monthly revisions that you're discussing have been in the 100,000 to 200,000 range, you know, negative in the you know, per month for how many months? Almost every month for the last 2 years that I've been.
Well, 200 would be a lot because the numbers have only been 250 or 280.
Yeah, I saw one revision where they had projected 200,000 and the actual number was like 10.
Well,
so after the revision, let's say it's 50,000 a month. You know, that's, you know, what, 600,000?
Yeah.
You know, 600,000 in a year, and that would not create the kind of surprise that you saw with this 800,000 number. So that's why I my understanding is this 800,000 number is out of the blue, and so I'm, but again, the number itself is not the issue for me. It's the process, and the process of how it's being reported, and which leads me to my next note. Back in the 1990s.
Wait a minute, before you do that, I could see. These guys think that the economy is growing by leaps and bounds, and everybody on CNBC, that's their story. I mean, you're anybody who manages money for people, send me your money, I'll charge you. And by the way, the market's going to grow 10%, and it's all because of me. That's the whole program. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they didn't totally screw up the birth and death numbers to a major extent. I don't think the economy's growing at all.
I don't think it is either. But again, the reason that you need that reporting going on is because that favors a particular worldview, and so that's what you're getting.
I just want to say you got to say real growth, because if it is growing because of inflation or whatever,
it's nominal growth.
Well, yeah. But it is. I mean, with the revisions and the prices and those things going up,
yeah, you
know, quote growing.
Agreed, and we'll pump another trillion.
That's how you justify it.
Yeah,
by leaving out
trillion in there.
The only issue that I have with, since I'm firmly in the middle now, Lou. By the way, I'm a toss up between you and maybe Greg. I'm voting for. You're gonna get a vote, maybe. Because I'm tired of getting lied to by both sides. I mean, I just had it. But I think the thing that I would disagree with you and with some of the people on the left, they do this for everybody. If you go back, 30 years in the number of...
The difference is that one side gets hammered for these kinds of reporting errors and these kinds of mistakes, and the other side gets nothing.
Well, the biggest kick-up...
It's covered up.
The biggest kick-up in the medical expenses in the economy...
And by the way, Tom, just so we're all clear, lying about economic numbers is nothing in my book compared to lying about the mental condition of the President of the United States.
Yeah, I don't...
Deceiving the country as to who is actually running it.
How much... I don't really answer this. How much worse do you think he is in his last year in office than Reagan was?
Oh, I think he's 10 times, 100 times
How would
worse.
Anybody know? We never got to see Reagan his last year.
Well, we did, and we listened to Reagan, and Reagan's mental decline was widely reported.
Well, he didn't try and run again. Well, he couldn't have, but after two terms.
No, Reagan's mental decline was nothing compared to what you're seeing with this idiot that we've got.
The stuff I'm seeing out of these since the two conventions were the ones going, the amount of mistruths and flat out lying on both sides. I guess it's always been like that.
There is no comparison in my mind. And this doesn't necessarily make, I don't believe makes me a partisan in any way. This is something that just needs to be confronted. We had a constitutional violation at the most fundamental level with respect to who is actually leading the country that has been ongoing, a deception that has been ongoing for at least 2 years, not to mention the fact...
Couldn't that be a national security?
It is a national security issue. Not to mention the fact that we had a vice president who was selling his office and should have been impeached for that during the Obama administration. And deliberately interfered in our foreign policy to benefit his kid. And that, I don't think there's any question about that anymore. Now, those two things are, way past, the CPI grew or the CPI, is under control or
I don't
inflation
think any,
is under
How does anybody
states.
Have any idea of how lucid this guy is for 4 hours a day at the desk?
They don't. That's a lie. They were covering up. I mean, he looked, my personal opinion, I thought he was a mental defective in 2019 and in 2020 when he was running. And that's why they kept him in the basement. This has been a deception, as I said, at a constitutional level. And Greg is exactly right. National security is a huge issue. This has been a, who knows, we're eventually going to find out. Probably 10, 15 years from now, that he was propped up with so much medication and heavy drugs that they could get 2 or 3 hours out of him a day, they were lucky, of lucidity. And I'm like I said, that deception, practiced for however long it was practiced, is a constitutional violation of such magnitude that all the other statements that you want to point to, they're lying about inflation or whatever, pale into insignificance.
Lou, I've been on the camp that for the last real long time, whoever has sat in the Oval Office has not been in charge of anything. You think Bush was?
Yes, I do.
How?
What do you mean by think how?
You don't think decisions. Rumsfeld, the neocons, rode over that guy like he was a dog?
I don't.
Oh,
I
come
think
on.
He was making decisions.
Oh, yeah, what they had to dinner. You mean he didn't.
Tom, I realize that you have a worldview that is highly conspiratorial and vehemently opposed to Republican elites.
Oh, no.
You ought to be supporting Donald Trump in that regard.
Not at all, by the way.
I'm just going to say, there was never any question in my mind about Bush's mental acuity, and you're mixing apples and oranges here. You're talking about a guy who is being advised by people and is ultimately making a decision versus a guy who is incapable of making a decision.
I don't think
whose mental facilities are so dimmed that, well, he cannot function.
I watched the debates. It's obvious to me why they schedule him 10 hour a night if they're meant to make him look good. Somebody tried to make him look bad.
You ought to ask yourself why that debate with Biden was scheduled when it was.
All I know, Lou, is that on one side, everybody seems to know everything, and they don't. Nobody knows. Nobody can. You've never walked in there at 10 in the morning and found out if the guy can do decisions from 10 to 12 or 2 or takes a nap. Or, I mean, none of us do.
Okay. So we operate on a certain level of trust with regard to the people in office, right? That they are not crazy, drunk, which is the latest allegation against Ms. Harris, or mentally incompetent.
You remember what Mayor Daley said? Who are all these alligators? Where are they?
We validate that by our observation and the reports on people around them. There has been a conspiracy, and I will use that term deliberately, to shield a constitutionally infirm, and by that I mean a 25th Amendment infirm president, from being assessed as capable of doing the job and being screened to prevent the public from understanding just how limited he was. And you heard me say this a couple of, right after the debate, the last debate with Trump, where Trump crushed him.
What do you mean crushed him? He was almost, if Biden was normal, Trump would look crummy.
Trump crushed him because Biden is mentally defective.
I listen to, when I go over to my friend's house, I listen.
Tom, there's no question about what happened.
I'm not debating with you.
Biden's people ran a coup against him.
Why they even decided to run him? I have no idea. I'm not debating all that. But the last time I saw Trump,
so
and this is
back.
Not. I'm saying now going forward, we have a guy just as old.
I said right after the debate, this guy needs to be removed. As much as I hate the idea of Harris as president, because I think she's a horrible person, I don't think she's mentally defective, and she, if this is this bad, this guy needs to be removed. They ultimately did run a coup against him by threatening him with a 25th Amendment move if he didn't agree not to run.
Which they should have.
Well, no. What they should have done is removed him. If he's this bad, then he needs to go. He shouldn't be sitting.
I don't know.
This is Greg's national security issue.
I don't think any of us know. I honestly don't. I mean, I know that people on one side. What's the crazy station that the Republicans listen to? Not Fox, the one that's way worse, Newsmax. If I listen to that for 30 seconds. Last week I heard Trump on one of his, and this is not one or the other. I'm not going to be one of those people. Well, I guess I'm doing it, which I don't really want to.
I listened to him talk about
Hillary for 20 minutes. Hillary,
yeah,
what's that all about?
I know, we're not talking about Donald Trump.
No, but I'm saying the same issue you're finding with Biden, because we're zeroing in on him. And by the way,
find me somebody who's mentally incompetent as Biden.
What I'm trying to get out of you here is, because you know this better than me, is when Biden was elected, I, like you, sensed a certain amount of degradation. Some of it was he always had a problem talking because he's, you know, kind of a stutterer. And I couldn't, from a distance...
Well, part of it. And a huge part of it is because he's dumb.
Well, let me... I never was a fan of the man. What I'm saying is, I've noticed in the last 8 months, because that's all I listen to when I go to somebody's house, I've noticed the same sort of degradation in Trump.
There is definitely a deterioration in Trump. He is acting like a very fit... What is he, 80?
Yeah.
He's acting like a very fit 80-year-old. Okay?
Well, but I'm saying... I wouldn't be surprised if he gets in. We have the same problem 3 years from now.
I mean, it's possible. I don't like it, but I'm not focused on that right now. What I'm focused on, forget about, you know, the fact that we had, you know, two octogenarians running. Focus on the deception. That's my point. The deception that these people engaged in the White House, in the press, where they knew he was drugged to the gills. They knew that he couldn't function for more than a couple of hours a day. You know, the old...
Well, we don't know if he's drugged to the gills.
Oh, I'm...
You and I may suspect it, but we don't know.
Okay, so we're going to get into an epistemological argument here?
I mean,
what do we know? We don't know anything. We don't know what's going on with Donald Trump. We don't know... No, come on, man. We know he's being drugged because we have reports out of other people that have been around that White House who have reported the cocktail that they put him... have been putting him on for years.
What was Hitler up to, 21 pills a day?
I'm not going to run down that rabbit hole. My point is this conspiracy around him is a constitutional violation. It's treasonous, in my opinion. It's at some level. It represents a huge danger to the country. And that, as I said, arguments about what the inflation rate was pale into insignificance compared to one thing.
It's all part of the same. Let's keep our guy in power. Let's keep the power at all costs.
It's not all part of the same thing.
Well, I mean,
it's part of this. I mean, that was the ultimate goal, but this goes way past a normal. We're gonna skew Department of Labor numbers in our favor.
All I'm trying to say, Lou, is that if we're in the same situation. We notice people are to turn the bus around. It's the on steroids decision of when do you take the car keys away from your dad. Everybody puts it off a day, is in denial, and all of a sudden
you cannot normalize that for the president of the United States.
We have before.
With who?
Roosevelt, Reagan, Wilson.
Wilson is the only thing comparable to what we've just observed, and Wilson was the result of a stroke or some medical sudden medical condition.
When Harry Truman went to be advertised as vice president, when he would be interviewed as being the new vice president, he said he was in the room 30 seconds, and he goes, "I'm not being interviewed for vice president. I'm being interviewed for president. This guy's got 2 months to live."
That may be correct, but Roosevelt was apparently capable of functioning almost all the way up to the very end. Same with Kennedy.
We wouldn't have known that though, because now it's way more. You would have to hit him a lot better in this scenario.
And they did.
Yeah. Anyway, SP Futures up 9, Nasdaq's up 54. Be right back, buddy.
It's like I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off!
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howard, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P Futures up 9, Nasdaq Futures up 56, Dow Futures up 35 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 52.3%. Everybody's up here, but not a real lot. FTSE up 12.2%, CAC run up 17.2. So we're just creeping to the upside just about everywhere. Nikkei up 259. It's a little bit more than a creep. It's 0.7%. Hang Seng, here's a big move, up 249, it's 1.5%, 17,641. Yet Shanghai is down 8 points. I just disconnect between the Hang Seng and Shanghai. I'm going to have to quiz Russell on that next Wednesday. I do not understand that at all, but good thing I don't have investments over there. A 10-year up 6 basis points. That's a lot, 3.83. It's interesting the market's up on days the interest rates goes up these days. It's kind of weird. Bund up 3 basis points, 2.23. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.88. Oil, I get a loose take on this, up 40 cents, 72.33. Boy, the oil world is so quiet the last few weeks, and we spiked over 80 when Saudi was supposed to do something. That fell on their face. Now we're back down to the low end of the range. Brent up 50 cents, 76.56. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.15. RBOB up a penny, 2.22. Gold down 7.80, but still over 2,500, 2,539. Silver up 3 cents, 29.56. We'll see. Joel thinks that silver might be going to catch up. I don't know if there's a natural spread trade there, but some people think there is. Copper down 3 cents. Let's say there has been a natural spread trade there. More of a Greg question. Is the same going to hold true going forward? God only knows. The euro dollar is up to 111, so the dollar is dropping pretty much every day. Pound's up to 131. Japanese yen is 146. Crypto, Bitcoin, down 77 bucks, but still 61,224. That's close to recent highs. And yesterday, the market was up 55. The Dow, S&P up 23, NASDAQ up 102. Yet another up day after the one little down day on, where are we, Thursday and Tuesday. Powell is supposed to talk from Jackson Hole tomorrow. And I'll have to point out that Mr. Lou Michaels is not in Jackson Hole. I thought this was his year, but he is not. Neither are you, Greg. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. It is 6:41 here in Chicago. We've got 55 degrees right now. High of 77 today. Nice. Plenty of sunshine. It's going to be a gorgeous day outside. Phoenix, 87 now. High of 106 today. Partly sunny. Possible afternoon thunderstorms. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 16 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 31 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 20 minutes. Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 of the Ryan is 22 minutes. MLB, White Sox win at Giants, 6-2. Diamondbacks win at Marlins, 10-8, and the Tigers win at Wrigley, that was 8-2. NFL, tonight we have Colts at Bengals and Bears at Chiefs. Who are you cheering for?
Do you have your Super Bowl tickets?
I'm hoping for 500. So I got.
So why do you think that, first of all, why don't you have all of us with press passes to Jackson? And why does an intellectually superior dude like Lou not have two tickets and call me up and say, Chief, you're my date?
Chief for the Chiefs.
You don't want to go to Jackson.
Lou, we'd love to sit at the bar and watch all these people sitting next to us and find out how much what they really think or if they really think.
First of all, they would never tell you. Second of all, Jackson at this time of year is a tourist nightmare.
Not where these guys are.
Well, I was up there for a wedding 2 years ago, and it's something.
Aren't they at that? I'm going to show my age. That new when I used to go up there skiing, the place wasn't even there. Aren't they at that big resort with the Arnie Palmer Golf Course? It's actually way outside of town, right?
Yeah. It's all outside of the city.
It's like halfway to Targi, right?
Yeah, the town itself is nice. Very upscale. There are a number of art galleries and a lot of other things. But in the summertime, it's absolutely swamped.
In the wintertime, I've gone there skiing a few times, and we went to Yellowstone from there. There's all these empty gas stations, Lou. And me being the big dummy, I go, hey, why do you guys have all these empty gas stations? Well, because in the summer, they're not empty. Like a million people come through Jackson on their way to Yellowstone. I go, really? Town doesn't look like this. No, it doesn't. They must make a fortune there in the summertime.
It's packed, and it's an interesting mix, much like Aspen or Vail up here. Although Aspen's hard enough to get to, Vail, because it's right off I-70, is easy to get to, easier to get to, but it's much like those towns where you have an interesting mix of people who are just coming in to look, and then you've got what I call the global elites, like the people that were just involved in that terrible yacht disaster in Italy.
Oh God, yeah.
Uh, But you have the global elites, you know, rubbing shoulders with, you know, Bob and Sue from you know, someplace in Iowa, who've come into town to gawk at the mountains and sort of say, yeah, I walked through Vail. It's an interesting mix. Jackson strikes me as being very much like that.
Well, they don't have the same hand in glove relationship that like Steamboat Ski Area does with Steamboat Springs to town. They've always been very tight, from what I understand. But Jackson never had that kind of relationship with the ski resort.
Jackson, I think it started as a mining town, and is, you know, those roots are still there. The ski guys came in and, you know, altered the terrain around it. Probably Steamboat, I think the model for Steamboat is Breckenridge or Vail, where the ski corporation came in and really dominates the entire political
Steamboat's the county seat and everything else. It's a real town. It's a real ranching community.
Oh, I mean, so is Breckenridge.
Well,
so is
now Vail. Didn't they go down to like 200 people when before the ski resort?
Breck?
Yeah. I think they did.
Well, I mean, maybe in the 40s, you know, when the dredging operations and the mining operations shut down, but
they were in danger of being scrubbed off the map.
Breck is, you know, it's very much it was very much a corporate town. It's not so much anymore, but yeah, Breck, Keystone, those little villages are, they run around the ski operation.
Well,
and,
let's
so
just,
does, and so does Steamboat. I mean, I think that's the model. Aspen, no.
Well, you know, I was there in the summer, and you swear to me, it wasn't even one. I mean, all there's ranches all around there, working ranches and stuff. I mean, it's way busier. Anyway,
ranches where? In Jackson?
No, around Steamboat. That's big ranch country and everything. I mean, there is.
There's agricultural stuff up there, but Steamboat runs on the ski area.
Well, a lot of the money is there. Hey, regardless, we're going to get somebody in the office that I'm going to say maybe wouldn't be the one of our first choice. Well, also, I'm reading here about the Red Sea attack. We've got stuff with China. We got stuff with Russia. Is there a way that Congress, somebody can come together and actually make some progress the next 4 years, whoever the hell's in there? Or are we just winging up our hands and 4 years from now you and I are having the same discussion, who the hell are we going to put in here?
Are you talking about defense policy?
I'm talking about there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done. Who's ever ass lands in the Oval Office? I question the ability of either one of them to get anything done, but I would really like to see something get done because I don't know that we can go another 4 years of nothing.
Well, the guy who's the bull in the China shop, to a certain extent, is Trump. But I think if you want, you know, horrific change, vote for Harris. She's gonna put in price controls. She's going to start taxing unreal. I mean, if what she proposes goes through, she's in favor of price controls, which will devastate the economy. She's in favor of taxing unrealized gains on stocks, which is the most lunatic idea that I've ever heard in my life.
We do that in the futures world. Kind of strange.
You do that for anybody in the business, Lou.
We do that. It's a little... I don't know how implementation goes.
What? Sure you do. If you're a professional, you
have to mark your account
mark everything
to market. So
you have to what? I'm sorry?
It happens.
You have to market. If I'm a professional, I buy IBM at 100, and at the end of the year it's 120, I made 20 bucks. I got to pay on it, even if I didn't sell it.
When? For what? What happens if it goes down?
Well, then you get the loss next year.
Do you get the money? You get the money back?
And if you're professional, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say as a regular person, who has stocks, the idea that I would be taxed on my stock going up, and not get a refund from the government when the stock goes down, is
well, you do. You have you, then you have a tax loss the next year.
Yeah, but the losses don't offset the gains.
Sure, they do. If you're in the business, they do.
Well, if you're in the business, maybe that's right. But for those of us that aren't in the business, that's
what do you
a
think,
phantom.
What do you think was the major shock to the industry? I'm not going to show my age, but I'm going to have to. The Tax Act of 1984 that made people in the industry mark their stuff to market was a great shock to people in the industry. Because you could take now if you were rational, Lou, which I think you are, but how many young market makers age 30 were rational? What you could do literally is we used to get something. Now when you get your statements, it'll show where you bought it, right? And then it'll all show because your statements are the same as from PTI. You're going to get shows you where you bought it, and it's going to show you today's price and if you made money or didn't. Well, imagine I would trade in the OAX, but we also, well, when the OAX first started, it was 83, but we had positions in probably 50 stocks, and you would get us option positions. So you'd get a status sheet which showed you the price of every single option you paid, either bought or sold on the sheet. So all you had to do the last weekend of December was pick a couple of losers and roll those into another position. There was two stocks. One of them was Litton Industries. Remember those guys? They were a big conglomerate.
Yep.
Every year they would do something really stupid. Well, I think it was kind of stupid, but they thought it was a good idea. They would give out like a 2% stock dividend. So you'd have options that were 32s and 32.5s. So people would come in and they would buy or sell that spread because the stock moved around. And so if you bought the 30-32 spread for, say, you know, you probably paid, you paid more than 7/16, so you probably paid 15/32 for it because you probably averaged the price. So you'd come in, what's the market on the 32-32.5 spread? They'd go 7/16 to 9/16. Well, you bought that spread in the hopes the stock would move $5. And one of them is going to be a loser, right? So you would take the losing leg off and not have to pay taxes. People who are in other industries would become market makers on the options exchange just to roll their taxes in other industries. And all of a sudden in 1984, they go, no, you got to mark everything to market. So not only, now guys like you and me, who are old dud kind of guys, we might have been smart enough to say, okay, we had a huge year. We made 100 grand, which is a lot of money back then. We're going to roll 75 of it. We'll pay on 25, but we're going to put the 75 grand in the bank and make 12 or 15%, whatever the hell it was at the time, and so we still have it. But of course, when you're young, dumb, and full of you-know-what, we'll spend it. It's always going to be like this, right? Look, so everybody else just spent it. And all of a sudden, they said, now when you mark the market, you had to mark the market for like all those years. The drain of money coming off the trading floor was something you never saw. But you could actually, Lou, if you traded a lot and you came to, say, if PTI, we used to do a lot of seminars. If you came to a couple of our seminars, you could put down that you were a trained option trader and you could apply to the IRS to be taxed as a professional.
Ah, okay. All right, that's the difference.
Yeah.
In any event.
Okay, but let me roll this one for anybody who thinks that this
non-merit-based economy. If you want a non-merit-based economy, vote for Harris.
Anybody who thinks that this roll your assets to your kids at the basis that you bought it, and nobody pays the tax ever. Anybody who thinks that's why when a lot of people talk about this generation-based or inherited-based wealth, that's what they're talking about. And
yeah,
and it's not somewhere along the line. I'm sympathetic to this capital gains thing. I'm very sympathetic, and I think that somebody who bought a ranch 50 years ago for a grand an acre and now it's 10, I think you need to do something with that, Lou. Now, whether you index your basis and say, okay, the grand that I paid for is now worth 3 or 4, so that becomes my new basis. You can't just say nobody pays any tax on it, because you and I are paying tax all the time. The idea, and I also think that somebody who owns something for 20 years should get a different capital gains rate than somebody who owns it 12 months in one day. I think that's insane. So there's a lot of work to do in there, I think.
So I listened to a University of Chicago economist. He writes The Grumpy Economist, John Cochran. I just dumped his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Cochran. Okay. I listened to him the other day, and he went back and said something that I've thought made a lot of sense ever since I first learned about this in sort of basic income tax law. He said, look, the goal of the federal, or our taxing authorities, should be to get the most revenue for the simplest, you know, in the simplest process. And you know, the easiest process to assess, evaluate, and not, you know, and step away from the kind of social engineering that we want to try to do with our tax revenue. And so he just said the way to do it is a sales tax or a value-added tax that gets added onto transactions.
Bull.
He said it has,
bull.
It has by...
I think it's just total bull bleep.
Well, I know you would disagree. He said it has the added advantage of you know, penalizing consumption, which is something we supposedly want as a social value. It is regressive in the sense that, you know, it hits people regardless of their income.
Well, but people who have money want it to be regressive.
Well, I'm just saying it hits people, but you know, it is absolutely fair. It doesn't require.
Right. So
it does. It's fairer. It's fairer than the tax system we have in place right now.
So the lady who got her old man's Las Vegas Sands stuff, and she's in the Lucky Sperm Club, and all of a sudden she's got $5 billion worth of the crap, never has to pay taxes on it, sells it and buys Mark Cuban's thing because she has a spare $2 billion to throw around. That never... So if we put a raise the tax on bubblegum, somehow or another she's gonna be even with the rest of us?
I'm not worried about whether... It's not a question about being even. It's because he said the goal should be to get the most revenue so you can do whatever you want with your programs to... somebody doesn't like that idea. So that you can get the most revenue for whatever programs you want with the least amount of bureaucratic craziness and nightmare codes.
I have this discussion with my brother, who's as terrific a guy as you are, Lou. But of course, you know, brothers can argue about everything. It's like you and I can argue about everything, even though whenever I argue with you, I come away knowing something that I didn't know when I went into the argument.
No, I feel the same way. I didn't realize you guys were subject to unrealized gain taxes.
I wouldn't call it that. I'd call it mark to market.
Okay. I call it an unconstitutional taking, and
I would hope
maybe the Supreme Court might toss that along with a few.
Can't be to toss it. That you're a professional. You buy and sell stuff all day. You want to be able to pick out the losers at the end of the year and roll them like we used to.
Pay tax on the stuff that you realize gains or losses on.
Okay, I'm saying that's one point of view, and people realize how screwed up that was in 1984, and anybody's challenged it since. Anyway, you'll be happy to know that all the police that we didn't think were existed have all been found with the convention.
Oh yeah, no, I've been watching. I mean, I haven't been watching the convention because I don't have enough anti-nausea medication to deal with.
Oh, I couldn't watch either one of them.
I didn't watch the Republican one. Although I did watch the replay of Hulk Hogan's speech, which I
bet he was pretty good. You know
he was terrific.
You know
terrific.
We've been sweating, doing what else? Swearing over to construction and the Kennedy. You'd be happy to know that we found a way to open up the express lanes, which have been closed all since March or February, whenever they closed them. For the dignitaries and
sure, because the elites get what they need.
Yep,
the rest of us kind of bumble around.
Now you could drive, say, to Orland, like I do a couple times a week, and see people going by 100 miles an hour with blacked out windows on the shoulder of the thing. You'll never see a state police car. I saw three this morning guarding the entrance of this, lest some schlump like you or me or Greg were to say, hey, this is an open road, I think I'll take it. That could never happen, right? And then I saw four state police people in one block this morning. I haven't seen four state police in the last 10 years.
Let me throw out just how evil this process is that you're discussing. Your boy, Brandon, your mayor, had his police people or permit people, whatever they are, slow walk the parade requests and the demonstration requests for any Jewish organization that wanted to demonstrate in counter to the pro-terrorist demonstrations that are going on daily outside the United Center. And so this is a civil rights violation, another constitutional violation that the Democrats...
How would you like to be the judge that's caught in the middle of this?
Well, the Chicago judge is never gonna find that there's a problem. You know that, but the federal judge might. But the idea that you would, on the basis of the fact that these people are Jewish, you would say we're not going to give you a parade permit, but we're going to allow the Islamic fundamentalists. I assume that's who are out there. The pro-terrorist.
They only gave two permits.
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, one was Sunday. And it was a group of, there was like 15 different organizations in there. And Palestinians were not, they might have been in there, but most of it was called, the Justice for something? It had to do with...
Oh, the Palestinian cause is right in the middle of that.
Well, but it had to be LGBT. They went from Michigan Avenue down to 9th Street to a park and had a little rally and dissipated. The other one was the group that went from Union Park to some other place. That was a Palestinian group. And they didn't cause any trouble either. It was some other
group. Who were the ones attacking the police barriers?
I don't think those people had a permit. That was something different.
Well, you had hundreds of arrests, I know. But
yeah, I think there was only two permits issued, so you can't say one side's favored, not the other. There's only two issued.
Well, my understanding, what's being reported, and I trust the sources because they're coming in from multiple sources, is that there were permits granted to the pro-terrorism guys and permits rejected.
Last I heard, there were only two permits granted.
No, we have to. I'll look. That's
because then, because this group, they were Palestinians. They kept negotiating with the city, and finally, they settled on being able to put up a band stage at the second park, and they didn't cause any trouble.
Yeah, no, I saw the pictures of that.
I don't know who the guys were that were charging down the. You want to be in the fence business, though, Lou?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's sure.
Last point. You know, they got a $600,000 bill from the parking people for all the meters they're not really meters, but the parking spots they covered up for the NASCAR race. What do you suppose the bill's going to be for this thing? Well, all the streets they got closed. They're going to say, you guys owe us $1 million in parking fees because nobody can park there. And they're going to have to pay it, these idiots.
Sounds like commerce.
Why, you were here at the time. Why don't we have that parking deal? You could have been our attorney.
Because we're not connected. Nobody came to us and said, invest. Go find some disadvantaged group that you could front as a business proposition, and we'll sell you all the fence permits we need.
No, I'm talking about the parking meters. Why don't we have that?
Oh well, that was rigged from day one.
Well, one of these days, shouldn't we be one of the riggers? I'd rather be a rigger than rigged.
You were the guy that had the connection with Richard Daley, not me.
Well, that's the truth. Well, my brother did. He used to work out with him every Saturday, but Dan's too nice of a guy for that. I just want to be one day, I want to be the rigger, not the riggee. What can I say? Just once. Look, I don't care if it's a porta potty contract. Just once. It wouldn't be as nice, but I bet they're very lucrative.
On the note of portable toilets, I will take my leave and say good morning to Dan.
All right, take care of yourself. Let's be fused up 12, Naz. If he's on 71, do we have Dan?
Yes.
All right, Dan, why don't we have the porta potty contract?
I don't know.
I told you that I had I've told this story probably too many times. Some guy comes in, he's looking for me to manage his money. This is 15 years ago, maybe. The guy goes, Chief, what are you doing this for? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, all you got is a bunch of clients. They probably don't like you if you don't make it. No matter how much you make, you should have made more. I said, no, my guys aren't like that. I mean, they really aren't. And he says, you know enough people. Why don't you just get yourself, the lunch business at the jail or the linen business, washing all the sheets or something. He goes, all you're going to do is play golf and gin rummy in the country club for the rest of your life, and you go check it out once a week, and it's an absolute gold mine. I mean, you just sit there, nobody knows who you are. you just got this one contract and away you go. And I go, I guess it's just not me. But, you know, but I mean, it would be a lot easier, wouldn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it's just not me either, but I totally get it. I have a buddy who runs a chain of laundromats, which is a really good business, you know, a cash cow business, and yeah, he's enjoying retirement.
God. Whatever happened to the laundromat bar connection places? Those are big for a while, where you go to the put your stuff in the laundromat and head into the bar and have a beer.
Have a drink, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would think they'd be in the bigger city still, but I haven't seen one of those in a while.
I had a, when I lived downtown here, more anybody needs to know, but I mean, most of the time, if you got a washing machine in the building, it's not big enough for, you know, if you got a big comforter, right? So once in a while, I'd have to go to this laundromat to clean the comforter, because they got those big honking machines, and those days were $6. I don't know what they are now. So I go in there, and, you know, it's a Saturday morning early. Usually there's nobody in the place. And there's this, not that I noticed, very attractive young lady. And she's sitting there, and she's doing her laundry, and doing her laundry, and doing her laundry. And she's, not that I'm, I mean, I try not to be a pervert, but she's stacking up underwear, like a pair, a pair, a pair. Finally, the stack is like as tall as me. And I go, I couldn't resist, Dan. I go, hey, you come here often? Which, and she was very friendly. She goes, actually, no, I don't. I've had this boyfriend for like a long period of time, and I was pretty much staying at his place. And you know, every week I'd go out and buy myself, you know, 7 more pairs of underwear. And then we just broke up, and now, you know, I got to wash everything. I'm going, oh my God. She gave me her whole life story. I'm sitting there going, I've never, you know, I don't know how many pairs of underwear people normally have, but there had to be 200 of them. I had to say something. By the way, you come here often? She goes, no, like, I haven't been here in like a year. I have no kidding.
God. That's why.
Everybody has a story. That's why people are so much fun, aren't they? I mean, they just, you never.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right?
So we have people winging around all these kind of ridiculous. You know, we had, when Trump got elected, he had a bunch of stuff on his website about what he's going to do with the health industry, and that night they all disappeared, right? Now, I don't think Kamala Harris ever really said she was going to have price controls. I said something about, but I mean, I can't believe, A, that she has any idea, maybe she does, maybe she's smarter than I think she is, what a fiasco that was and how complicated it was during the Nixon administration.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of a student of that, because, you know, they asked me to research the stuff when I was at Pullman, because it didn't really matter in railroad cars, but it was so messed up. Dan, I don't know if you ever even, probably was, you probably aren't old enough to, I'm sure you remember it, but not enough, you weren't of the age where you actually had to go through the detail. The detail was, if you were at a gas station, it wasn't as simple, it was simple on the wages. You know, don't give anybody a raise. Well, that part people loved, right, if you were in business. But the other part, if you're charging $1.50 for gas and you're getting it from somebody at $1.20 and he sends it to you at $1.25 because he got it the nickel further up the chain, you got to raise it another nickel. It wasn't like you had to eat the difference. If it came to you higher, you got to piggy move it up. So it really, on the supply side, it was nowhere near as onerous. You just had to throw some paperwork down, or somebody bitched and said, hey, this guy Dan Janis has raised his gas price from $1.50 to $1.55. All you had to do was say, see, my wholesale price went up 5 cents. Okay, Dan, you're fine. You know, so it never really worked or was designed to work. It just was a massive mess, and it was just a reason for people not giving anybody a raise.
Right.
So I don't think she wants to go down that road. I mean, first of all,
no.
I don't think she...
You know, and it's funny, because that's what's going on right now between the employment, you know, the rate cuts, which are already built into the bond market, by the way, and the, you know, the issue with the employment. And Chief, there's a lot of confusion, and it does have to happen. It does happen to be what's going on in your geographic region. So we have seen across the board that there's been, you know, we saw GM cut jobs this week. We've seen a number of companies, you know, sort of your more industrial names sort of cut back. Some of that has to do with productivity. Some of that has to do with getting lean. And for the most cases that where we talk directly to CEOs, supply chain has improved tremendously. Where it hurts us as consumers, and this is all consumers, is at the grocery store, at the restaurant. It's, you know, food prices have not necessarily come down. Maybe certain parts of the country, but not the parts that I've been spending time in. So that's definitely an issue. Contractors, if you're dealing with the, you know, I was dealing with the plumber that had to come by, and $120, you know, service fee, which to me seemed a little high, but the I don't see any stability in prices in those areas. When it comes to housing, it's all geographic. So there are parts of the country, and probably where you are, where there hasn't been anything too crazy going on. But Florida has just gotten nailed because of, you know, some circumstances such as the whole situation with condos and having to restructure them, and, you know, the high cost of HOAs, the high cost of insurance, a lot of people being driven out, a lot of excess inventory that's been built there. And as a result, we're seeing money, prices come down, and the money that has been there is not necessarily staying there because there's concerns about the housing market longer term. Then you go to New England, and talking to my friends in New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, there are bidding wars still up there. I mean, my parents' neighborhood is on fire. They can't get, you know, enough. I mean, there are literally bidding wars, and prices of properties have gone up 10-15% over the last year. So that it really depends who you talk to and where you are. So that I think trying to get an understanding of price stability, you really have to understand the whole country and what's going on. And I think the Fed has a tough job here because they're trying to keep employment, you know, maximum employment and price stability. But price stability, as far as I'm concerned, is still not there. And doing, you know, people say, oh, we should be having more rate cuts. We really don't need to reignite the economy because there are still areas of inflation. And as I've said in the last few times I've been on, inflation also includes the stock market. It includes...
No, that's brilliant investing on your part, Dan.
Well, of course it's brilliant investing. It's of course it's brilliant investing. But what I'm saying is, in terms of the growth in assets, the money supply, the money that's come into the system, you know, it came in through the corporate tax cuts, it came in through the COVID money, it came in through, it's more recently come in through just all of the benefits that have been offered since COVID to different businesses, and it hasn't stopped. But where else it's coming is just people having earned a lot, whether it be in their retirement plans or selling a business at a good price. That money keeps coming back in the system. And I have constant reminders of that from clients, from friends, at different parts of the country, different industries. So the economy in general is going well, but there are still issues, I believe. I don't think the price stability thing has worked itself out. And I, like you, Chief, I question the employment thing as well. I don't know whether that's truly the case. I think it, again, is industry by industry.
Well, what do you think of this big revision that Lou was talking about? I mean, the people on the right are absolutely livid that this is some huge... I think it's somewhat fairly normal. Messed up, but normal. And I can't get a... I mean, hopefully Carl will have the answer. I mean, he's probably listening, so he will have the answer tomorrow. First of all, that number ended in March, right? It was from... the previous April to March, so it wasn't like it's to today. I don't know if it makes any difference, but I'm just kind of curious. I mean, I don't know the answer, which makes me you've talked about the revisions being down seemingly most of the time. Now my question is that number the addition of 12 months worth of the revisions, or is it another, you know, 800,000 on top of that? I'm suspecting it's the revisions added up, but maybe not. You know, if it's another 800,000 after the revisions, then it's really balled up.
Agreed 100%. And I think what listeners need to know, and our clients need to know as well, is that this is a moving process. This is a dynamic process, and things are changing over time. so that what might look good last week based on the statistics might not look good 2 weeks from now. So we do have to consider what has happened and what has been revised, but we really, as investment people, have to look forward and have an idea or projection on what's happening in the future, not so much on just what's happened, and not relying on data that came out that ended, as you're saying, like at the end of March, that's already been revised twice or three times. We really need to be talking about what's currently going on and what our expectations are for the future. And we want to see signals that price stability is actually happening. I think we have some of those signals in place, but I don't think we have it across the board yet. I don't think it's consistent across the board. And I don't blame the Fed for holding off a little bit in cutting rates. I just hope they don't do something crazy in a few weeks, because if they try to go 50, I do think we're going to see, you know, we're going to see inflation creep back possibly, or we're going to see, you know, the exuberance in the stock market just go out, you know, just continue to go to a level that it really doesn't need to be right now based on valuations.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as I say this all the time, now Lou claims that compared to other things that this isn't all that important, but I guess it's the part I know better. He knows the defense and stuff, but these guys can do, how can I say this nicely, whatever they damn well please with these rates. They're peeing on our shoes and telling us it's raining since October of 2023, except for 1 month. Money supply has gone up every single month. The last 2 months. Now this is, they won't tell us what it is this last month, because they only give those numbers out to a few people evidently now. The last 2 months that have been reported, if you do the math, it's 4.7% increase on an annual basis. You can't tell me that isn't, if you were to put this guy Powell, who I don't think is a bad person, and start waterboarding him, which I don't recommend, by the way, he will tell you that his main job now is to maintain the wealth bubble for the elites. Because right now, he could care less about inflation or by the other stuff. He just ignores it, denies it. It's right now, I don't know what's going to change this. I mean, I finally have read the tea leaves. I mean, for 20 years, I never dreamed these guys would do this. I kept thinking that I know what they're doing, but they're going to realize that it's not the right thing, and they're going to turn around. They haven't. Right now, I mean, we don't have, if we sell calls against our stuff, it's like on a daily, but we always, since we're protected, we always are dragging some puts, so in case anything crazy happens, we're going to protect most of our clients' money. But right now, with some of the calls, we're even being a little more bullish. And I'm not like you. I think the market is incredibly high, but it's being done for a reason. And if they keep going at a 5% rate, you're not going to see inflation at 2%. You're going to see it at 5 or 6.
Yeah.
On top of what it already is. And you know what? Nobody cares, because the right people are making the dough, and the regular people are gagging. And guess what? The regular people don't have a vote. They think they have a vote with either one of these people running. They're out of their mind. They don't have a vote with either one of these people. I mean, the Democrats can say what they want, but they're more elitist now than the Republicans, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the one other thing I wanted to mention is just the yield curve, and thinking about the yield curve, meaning that, you know, talking about where rates are on the short end, you know, talking about, you know, 1 month, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, going all the way out to 30 years. And we are now seeing more flattening in the yield curve, and actually somewhat of a slight increase going from, say, twos to 30s. So that flattening, other than what's going on the very short end, is showing that actually is a signal of stability. We don't see the inversion that we've seen for a while, which generally suggests a recession, but we're not going to have a recession. That just isn't even the cards right now. There's way too much money, as you're mentioning, in the system, way too much money that's been made by people in the stock market, by people in their homes, and, you know, some places that wouldn't include every place, but it would include a vast majority of the places in the country. And yes, it is separated based on income. There is a bifurcation, and there's certainly those who have benefited more, but they keep benefiting. And, you know, the higher the market goes,
the
more money they make.
That's the beauty of being in the elites. Are we going to get to, remember the article last week where I talked about the lady, Jessica, was it Dickles or something like that? I never could get over her last name, but anyway, she talked about how the 59% of the people who think they're not doing well, how wrong they are. I mean, in the 20s, what did we get to? I mean, we weren't around, but we got to what, 80-85% of the people were in a recession or depression before the thing turned? I mean, are we going to drive it that hard this time, where the market's going to be?
I don't think so. I don't think
we're getting
so
there. I don't see. Where's it? Where do you see a change here? I don't.
The change is happening very, very slowly. That's what's happening. It's just happening very slowly, and it's happening at the periphery. I don't think it's not going to be something that happens overnight or very quickly. So I think some of it's going to involve patience. One issue that has been raised recently in some of the discussion on policies with the potentially new administrations coming up with the election is just the concept again of possibly raising corporate taxes a little. And I think a little is okay. I think, you know, we had gone from 35 down to 21. You know, I think if we are going to see some raise in corporate taxes, 25 might be the number. And that is going to help, I think, with the issues you've been discussing, Chief, on the money supply. I think that's going to help temper it. And there's been some discussion about, well, that's going to raise inflation because these companies are going to have to, you know, increase prices. I don't necessarily think so. I think it's going to cause companies to become even more lean going forward. And I don't think consumers are going to agree to these higher prices.
Anybody who says that has not had an economics class in their life.
Exactly. Precisely. They're missing something on the economics side. And that's what's so important. Some of these just very basic economics 101. There's a lot of talk going on out there, and because of the world of technology we live in, and the internet and social media and all that, I think there's a lot of information that's not accurate coming from people who certainly don't have the background like you, me, and some of the other people on your show. And, you know, we have the years of experience to know what generally happens in environments like this and what we can generally expect. So this environment isn't that different than any of the others we've been in. We can always make an excuse why it's different.
What would be your critique of my tax plan, which has got as much chance to snowball in hell, I know. I think the simplest thing to do on corporate tax rates, raise them up to individuals, because the Supreme Court said they're individuals, right? Raise them up to the same as individuals and allow dividends to be deducted and paid for by the guy who got the dividend.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that? Because the people who are in charge of the corporations want the tax thing to lean on so they never have to pay anybody any money.
Right. And that's what's happening, unfortunately. That's what's been happening. And then they also get used to it, and it's very difficult for them to change course. But there, I think some companies in certain industries, and lately they've been talking about grocery stores, have pricing power and have not really necessarily their margins have actually improved, but that's not necessarily a good thing unless you're an investor in the company. And I tend to avoid supermarkets in general and retail in general, but more specifically supermarkets. But if there was more focus on providing fair prices, and allowing competition to happen as it should, then I think we'd be better off.
Dan, if you go out to Orland, I'm not going to give you a world tour next time you're here because we're going to tour the bar, I hope. if you went out to Orland where Audrey lives, we could walk. Well, it'd be a little bit of a walk because everything's out there you got to drive to. Let's just say if we put a mile around Audrey's house, mile and a half, there's got to be 7 or 8 grocery stores competing like hell. And their gross margin is probably 1%. And the rest of the stuff is like gas stations, which has got to be the most competitive thing around. Why do we point to those two places? What do you suppose the average margin is in a grocery store? Is it 1%?
Yeah, it's about.
Why, and yet, what's Microsoft's margin? 65? Yeah. Or 70? I mean, what planet are we on? Apple, 65%.
Exactly.
I mean, they're the monopolists. We can't touch them, can we? If we did, my dividend thing, maybe the people at Apple would give the regular schmoes a $20 check per share. I think we'd all be better off with that than those guys hoarding it, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the whole that concept too, and unfortunately, what I hear on predominantly on the tech side and in the biotech to a lesser degree, is just that the way employees are treated, especially the younger people coming up that are 20 something, 30 something, even 40 something, that are, you know, they're taking benefits away, they're making the jobs less interesting, they're not providing the the advances or growth opportunities, they're not as focused on the people, because for so long those industries, unlike our industry or unlike, you know, manufacturing industries that used to treat employees who stayed with loyalty, they used to treat them very well. Well, they don't care about that in the tech business. The loyalty, the sense of loyalty isn't there. Too many people I know, including a few clients, have lost jobs after 20, 25 years, right before they were going to be fully vested in their pension plans. So there's a very short-sighted sense, I think, a lot of the people and a lot of the middle management running these companies, that the way you treat your employees is so important for loyalty, to attract the best talent. You know, there is something missing, and it just isn't my mindset, so I don't totally understand it. But it's going to become an issue as time goes on, and as there's pressure in those industries, or that there's some other issues that we haven't seen, maybe more issues with cybersecurity or a supply chain, or maybe something that happens overseas, something in the global world that disrupts technology, or maybe another one of those scares that we had, you know, not so long ago with the global internet.
We've allowed places to net. I mean, I'm sure you've taken voice. I can't say it was my most fun class, but I took a class in labor economics.
Yeah.
And virtually everything that was taught in that class kind of does not apply now, because in so many industries there's no competition.
Right. That's exactly.
I mean, Microsoft doesn't have any competition. They claim they do, and maybe at the edges they have somebody, but if they find somebody who's any good, they just buy them. I mean, the whole concept is mind-boggling to me after reading the Clayton and Sherman Act. The Googles of the world. What happened to these other map companies? What happened to these other Word? You know, where did it happen to WordPerfect? I mean, what happened? It's a total vertical integration that is banned by both laws.
Yep.
And plus these guys get these foreign workers at a lower price, and they can't go down a block and get a job somewhere else. I mean, it's okay if it's slavery from another country. I mean, I wish I had one of those jobs where I used to go to the country club and play some golf and play gin rummy and not worry about any of this stuff. But I mean, that's kind of our job, is to worry about this for our clients, and to see what affects the market and what doesn't. I mean, right now,
right.
I mean, it affects the market in the sense that you probably want to be long the 7 stocks until they get so ridiculously high that something is going to bust. But I don't want it to go so high that the bust is a 40-50% thing and everybody loses a lot of dough. I mean, the thing,
and that's still a possibility.
Yeah,
well, that could still happen. I mean, that could very well happen, and we don't necessarily know the timing of that. Kind of doubt it's going to happen before the election. I mean, and if anything is going on behind the scenes, and I believe it's not going to be at the forefront of any of the discussion in the media. You know, if we are having anything serious happening, but I do think there'll be an exogenous event that comes from someplace else that we haven't even considered. Just as COVID kind of, you know, came in very quickly, and you know, we saw the impact at the same time on oil prices and, you know, global supply and demand. So there are things that can happen still. I do think there's vulnerability. I do think there's issues with management, as we were discussing earlier with some of the tech companies. I'm concerned about some of the more basic industries, you know, having layoffs, and in some cases I know they're looking to improve productivity through technology, but you know, there still has to be a there, you know, the, as we call it, like the system we grew up in, and the, you know, the benefits that are given, the incentives that are given for the good employees that work hard, you know, you don't want to take those away. And when those start going away, I think that's going to be indicative.
Well, they're not going away for the guys up top. I mean,
not exactly. They can't go away for the middle management and the people below that are supporting those people up top. And that's where sometimes I think they're short-sighted.
I mean, I don't want to paint something here like that. We're going to go to break here in a second, but here's kind of what I think the danger is, Dan, is something. It's not one thing, and this comes from my cost accounting background where I used to do sensitivity analysis on stuff. It's not going to be the one thing that's going to drop the market or anything like that, because I think it never really is, unless, you know, because something not that crazy might happen to cause the market to even have a normal correction, 10%, 12%, something like almost happened 2 weeks ago Monday.
Yeah.
And I think if you and I were privy to the money supply numbers and what the Fed did on that day, as the guy here from Chicago said, Goolsbee, don't worry, the Fed will save the economy, meaning save the market. And I think the Fed did. So my scenario for the ducks that would have to drop is, and please tell me I'm totally nuts because I don't want to see it happen, is we might see somewhat of a normal correction. The Fed now, because that's their new job, pours money into the system, inflates the hell out of the place, which they seem to be doing right now, does it even worse. All of a sudden, inflation numbers go up, and there's more of a hue and cry from people, hey, these numbers you're feeding me are a bunch of crap. But the market reaction will be the 10-year rate. I'm not going to give American money. We're starting to see, Dan, I think, a little less coordination with these other central banks. And this 5% annual increase in the money supply, it's you're seeing it every day now with the dollar going down, right?
Yeah.
Dollar's going down every single day for like the last 10. So we're going to see the dollar going down. All of a sudden, the euro's going to be 115 or 20. The Fed's going to pour money in. The 10-year rate is going to have to go to 8 or 9. And the Fed doesn't control that. That's going to go to 8 or 9, and all of a sudden, we got a problem. And then the market cannot withstand that. That's my scenario, sort of like from what happened in the 70s and 80s. And because it's not just going to be, you know, Dan Janitas comes out and says Microsoft's too high, the market drops 5%, and the Fed just sits there and goes, that's no problem. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to pour money in right away, just like they did 2 weeks ago Monday.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of the dominoes as I see it, and I sure as hell don't want to see it. But that's right what they're playing into, aren't they?
I think so. I absolutely think so. I think there's a, you know, that, you know, we can bail them out mentality, or we'll bail them out, or they'll be able to be bailed out mentality is really not necessarily healthy when it comes to companies, you know, doing the right things, whether it be watching their balance sheets or you know, dealing with their you know, their cost and their labor and in a way that's going to be productive for them long term. And just knowing that could or probably will happen is concerning.
Well, and you want to have, just like the farmers in the Weimar Republic, you want to have as much debt as possible if that happens, because you can pay the debt back in less money, the money worth less, right? And that's not what the goal should be, but that's what the government's doing. SP futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 53. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks. We're talking about some where we should be putting our dough here, how to protect it. You know, what's the protection on a bond portfolio and stuff? Dan knows all about that. We'll talk about that when we come back.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Lone Wolf X, Tyson Jacks. I'm Tamar. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 58. Dow Futures up 19. I might going to get Greg to comment a little bit on some of the commodity stuff here because we're in Europe. We're to the upside here a little bit. DAX up 45.2%. FTSE up 3. Call that flat. It was up a little more earlier. CAC around up 14.2%. So green, but slightly. Nikkei up 259.7%. Back over 38,000. 38,211. As their government continues to do stuff with their currency that seems to be helping the market a lot. Hang Seng up 249, 1.4%. Shanghai, however, down 8.3%. We'll get Dan's take on that as to why they aren't moving in dovetail like they used to, or maybe ought to should. I don't know. Who knows? Should is a big word. 10-year up 6 basis points, and as Dan mentioned, 10-year's gone up straight up since Powell basically said he's going to cut short-term rates. So the yield curve is flattening dramatically. Bund up 2 basis points, 2.23. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.88. Oil, and I want Greg's take on this. We should have got it earlier. Oil up 19 cents, but only 72.12. It's down from, I'm going to say, $82 a few weeks ago. That's got to be a quiet pit. Brent, well, no pits anymore, but a quiet trade. Brent up 28 cents, 76.33. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.13. RBOB unchanged, 2.21. Gold, which has been on a tear, is actually down 13 today, 25.33, still hanging over 2,500. Silver up 2 cents, 29.56. Copper down 3 cents, 4.15. Foreign exchange, and this I just mentioned with Dan, euro's up to 111, and the pound is up to 131. Not massive moves, but euro was 108.5 for a long time, and the pound was 127.5, and they're doing the creep. Japan was at 146. Now it's 146 yen to the dollar. It's the opposite. I have to keep saying that every day because it is the opposite. That's why I don't like reporting on the yen. I got to make that statement. The Bitcoin down 344, 60,957. Again, 2 weeks ago Monday it was under 50. Now it's back up to almost 61. Crazy stuff. Yesterday, Dow was up 55. Nasdaq up 102, and the S&P up 23 after the one slight down day on Tuesday. Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and tell us what's going on in oil.
Yeah, 7:38 here in Chicago, 55 right now. High of 77 today. Nice, plenty of sunshine. Gorgeous day to be outside. Phoenix, 88 right now. High of 106 today. Partly sunny and possible afternoon thunderstorms. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 28 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 43 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 23 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is 21 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 is 24 minutes.
Well, beautiful day to demonstrate.
Beautiful day to demonstrate, too. Yesterday we had the White Sox winning at the Giants. That was 6-2. Diamondbacks win at Marlins, 10-8. The Tigers win at Cubs. That was 8-2. Tonight we got Bears at Chiefs. And in terms of what did you ask about?
Oil. Oil. How come it's down? Everybody keeps saying the Saudis are doing this, the Russians are doing this. All it does is go down.
Yeah, and could be a leading indicator. Also, over the same, where's copper now? 4.18.
I'll find it. Yes, it's hanging, but not going up.
Yeah, I mean,
4.15. Yeah. It's down 3 cents. It was 4.18.
and maybe a few months ago, you know, that was 4.7. So not small moves in the leading indicators. So take that.
Well, is the dollar's worth less?
You would think it would. Yeah. The commodities would go up.
But and they have. Well, gold has. It's at a record, pretty much 25.34. And your pound and your euro are going up. So I don't think Dan. I think the communication with the central banks is not as dovetail as it was during COVID.
I would agree. Yes. Yeah, and you hear each central bank kind of not necessarily moving in their own direction, but doing their own thing, and based on, you know, they're not necessarily following our cues the way they normally do. So in some cases, they're actually out in front of us, and then in some cases, they're not really necessarily paying attention to what's going on here as much as they have certainly over the last several years. Well, I think during the times where there's uncertainty, they always turn to the United States for their cues on how to handle things, and I think now that the other countries in Europe in particular is coming back, you know, their economy has stabilized and they're in a somewhat different situation than we are, but they're kind of starting to do their own thing. So yeah, there is definitely a distinction, and if you are in the foreign markets, there's definitely some inefficiencies that you could play both with currency and also with some of the companies that are based overseas that may offer might be attractive right now.
If you didn't have, I'll use the term coordination, the minute one country starts pouring money in, immediately their currency goes down and their interest rates adjust versus somebody else, right? I mean, there's no zero-sum game here. You can't, one just moves against another, correct?
And you know, one of the things, we were talking about commodities, and I was also going to mention, you know, you were talking about gold, but silver has done quite well recently as well, and that's one of the metals that we've actually done well in terms of the timing, you know, since the last cycle in silver. You know, I think we got in at 17, rode it up to 42, got out at in the 40s, and then it came back and it was trading around 20, and now it's up closer to 30. So there is still some momentum in silver, and it doesn't necessarily track gold. I've had clients ask recently questions about relationships between, say, gold and silver and, you know, the stock market, gold and silver and the bond market, foreign markets.
And what did you say? I'm all ears.
Yeah. So they don't always fall in lockstep, just as the point that you were making, which I think is a terrific point, about the central banks not always falling in line. It really depends on what's going on, and it really depends on supply demand. It depends on money supply, which is very important. Oil, again, trades in its own world, so trying to predict what's going on with oil and energy is very difficult. So many different factors, including the geopolitical factors. And when you have, I mean, going back to just think about, I just remember that phone call from Kenny Polcari in March of 2020, and we were both realizing what was going on to oil prices because of the huge change that we were seeing overseas, the Russians and the Saudis and the price manipulation and all that, and then boom, we get hit with this pandemic, COVID, right at the same time. So they do trade in their own worlds, if you will, and they're not that same relationship that you may have learned in economics or that you may have gotten used to over the years changes. And that's what we love about our business, that it's not, you really got to pay attention to all these different factors and how they relate. I'd say right now we're in an environment that some of it has to do with looking at where things have been. And for example, silver had been sort of underweight, or it had been, you know, it hadn't really quite gone up with stocks. I mean, there are times where they trade in sync and there are times where they don't. Recently, they tended to trade a little more in sync, but that's not always the case. Gold is not always an inflation hedge. I mean, there's been times when it has been and times when it hasn't. So there are other issues that impact that, and be careful when you're trying to set in stone these relationships. Think about just the stocks and bonds. So people say, oh yeah, well, bonds are there to be conservative. So when people are concerned about the stock market, they put all their money in bonds. Not always the case. We've seen both markets, stock and bond market, perform very well this year. stocks obviously higher because, you know, you're taking more risk. But bonds have done quite well this year and will continue to do well as rates come down. So don't be fooled by thinking that lower rates mean lower returns in bond. When the price, when those yields come down, the price of those bonds go up. So we are in an environment where both can do well and both will do well. It doesn't mean that a day or two things will be off, but we're in that environment where things are in sync. And then going to currencies, tough environment to predict currencies. I think that's one of the, I think currency managers have one of the most difficult jobs. Hedging currency is very common. Companies do that so that they don't have to pay attention to all those factors that impact currencies on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, be careful not to think, you know, to think just unilaterally that this relationship, this has gone up, silver's gone up, so that means that's going to hurt interest rates or a certain economic variable has changed. So that means that's going to impact the stock market. Not always the case. You got to look at the whole picture, which is what we do. You got to consider all the different factors, and this can change day to day.
Well, there's, I mean, there's different reasons why, you know, markets and gold and other stuff move. I mean, if the markets move because three or four companies become either more efficient or they got new products, and all of a sudden there's greater efficiency. The market can move. That's not going to drive gold at all.
Right.
But if it's the Fed pops 10% more money into the system, and the market goes up because of that, you would expect that since you didn't create 10% more gold in the last month, that there would be an adjustment in price there. And it's not gold necessarily going up. It's just adjusting to the new dollar number,
right?
Which is the hardest thing to explain to people.
It is. Yeah, it's very difficult. I think. Even harder is trying to explain the relationship between interest rates and bond prices.
Well, yeah, that's should be somewhat basic, but it's really not.
It isn't. It's not intuitive. It's a seesaw.
Dan, do you ever? I mean, it's easier on the stock side to protect. If somebody sends money to us today, and like the commercial said, if somebody put money in Pro Direct, you know, you can trade it, all of a sudden decide I want to be in fixed income, and within 2 days we can wing the money over to Dan. When I say over, then Dan gets to trade a piece of your account that you say Dan can trade. And if you want some of it to be protected, or if you have a concentration issue, you might want to do all your own trading on your, I'll use the term regular trading, yet you want to give 40% to Dan for fixed income, and oh, by the way, you have a concentration issue in some stock that your dad gave you, and you want me to protect that or my team, we can split it up that way. You just do your own stuff along your merry way. And if you want to talk to somebody, we're here. But I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people are pretty good at trading. I don't think anybody's as good as managing a concentration issue like I can, or managing fixed income like Dan can. So let's just all do what we do. I'm just saying. I
mean, yeah, absolutely.
But my question, Dan, is... do you ever, on my side of the fence, if somebody wants to buy, you know, $1 million worth of Qs, okay, I can hedge that pretty easily by just buying puts. And now whether we decide to pay for it by trying to do some stuff, earning some money on the call side to pay for essentially the insurance, we used to do that all the time, and now the market kind of seems to go up so much that we kind of dodge the calls. We actually may even get a little longer and do some repair strategies where we're even more bullish, even though I think the market is in danger price-wise. On a day-to-day basis, we've been more bullish than we've ever been. I mean, we've done very well in the last few weeks or the last couple of months as GDX, because we've been above the market on our call side the whole way. I mean, we've had some little time spread or something. They were trying to, you know, catch a little lightning in a bottle, and we've done it like 8 days in a row, for God's sake. Now, will that continue? No.
I think the volatility will continue, which is continue to help your strategy, and I think that's why your strategy has done well recently. Is just the in times of volatility, and this is exactly when investors should be putting their money with you guys, because the strategy is what's going to protect you from that volatility. And the large number of people who are watching, who may be retired or not retired, watching their accounts on a daily basis, some people get freaked out day to day, and this is when you know that you have that protection. And it's so important during periods of volatility, and we're in that period of volatility, and it's not likely to change. So I think your strategy will continue to remain in favor. And just as I said with fixed income, rates are most likely going to come down, at least on the short end. You make money in bonds when that happens. So it's kind of a no-brainer, and you're also getting a nice fat yield right now relative to what we've had over the last 15 years. And you're getting diversification, and you're higher in the capital structure than you would be in the equity market. So there's equally as much protection, but in a diversified way. It's a different strategy for providing that protection to a...
Well, Dan, do you, on your side, when I say your side, on the fixed income side, what if you had a client that said, look, there's 10 years come up to, it was 3.2 a couple of weeks ago, and now it's almost pushing 3.9, 3.84.
Right.
If somebody were to say, hey, Dan, I think that's good enough. If that's as high as it's going to make it, I'm going to plunk X number of dollars in a 10-year treasury, which is the TNX is the interest rate on that. And they said, well, is there any way I can make sure that if it goes to 10% that my account doesn't lose half its money in the first 6 months? There are, puts and calls on the TLT, but
yes.
Do you want to go out that far? I mean, you can't go out 10 years. I mean, that's the problem I have on... I mean, if you think this may happen in the next 6 months, I mean, clearly you can buy, some puts in the TLT and hedge your interest rate risk. But now, how much do you want to pay for those puts?
Right.
And by what you pay for the puts, does it eat up what you could have just got short term? There are ways to hedge interest rates, pretty easily, actually.
Yes.
But now,
yeah,
how do you match it up with the time frame of somebody's portfolio? That's pretty hard.
Yeah, right. And the part of the reason that it's hard is that if you want to be in, let's say, not just treasuries, but say you want to be in corporates or high yield bonds, and you want to buy a portfolio, you can actually short. You can short it and take a position against it. You can buy futures. I mean, there's a number of different ways to hedge your risk. But the way that you do it as an active manager, like us, who's generally a long-only manager, is that you diversify on the yield curve. And there's always a place on the yield curve where you're getting maximum return. But they have what's called a barbell strategy. So say you're getting, say the yield curve was very positive and you were getting the highest returns on the long end, you do barbell, which means that you have half your portfolio, if you will, in the very short term, which has low duration, low interest, low or if virtually no interest rate risk, and then you match that up with your longer. So that gives you that I wouldn't call it a natural hedge, but you're it gives you that diversification, so you can participate when rates come down, but you have that protection.
Well, when your short term one comes off and the long-term one is lower, then you get to buy it at the lower price. You didn't put everything in there.
Yep.
But, I mean, I'm going to say if we were to have somebody, God, 30 years sounds like a long time. If somebody wanted to buy the 30-year at 4.1, I'll go out on a limb here, Dan. You can hold me to this one. Hopefully 20 years from now we'll still be having a beer. Someplace, somewhere in the next 30 years, I'm going to say the 30-year trades 10%. Or 9%, I'll just lob that one out there, not as a sage or anything like that, but someplace, somewhere, they might be lower, they might be higher, but they're not going to be dead even for 30 years, I don't think, do you?
No, of course not. The longer you go in maturity, the more volatility there'll be. The thing is, you're trying to time the end just the same way that you would in the equity market. You're trying to time when it's at a low, low by price, not by yield. So the higher the yield, that's the time that you want to get in. However, I'll also say that trying to predict the direction of rates is not always that easy. It's easy on the short end when you know the Fed is going to be cutting rates. Much more difficult in the 5 to 7 is okay. But then once you get out beyond 7 years, it's very difficult. So the amount of risk you take, and it's called interest rate risk, increases as you go out the yield curve, as you extend the maturity. So there does have to be protection by balancing that with either shorter term investments, shorter term, or by buying futures. There's a number of different ways that you can hedge that risk.
Well, Dan, it was easy twice, Dan. It was easy in 1981 when the interest rates were 15, and you knew they could only go one way, and it was probably easy 2 years ago when they were zero and it could only go one way. But still, you had timing issues. I mean, you and I were early, you know, buying a lot of those puts. And
we were early, but the thing is, we're long-term investors, so it's okay to be early.
Yeah.
As a long-term investor, we're not trading the market. You know, there are people that try to do that. I think it's very difficult to try to make money in and out. We've done it. We've done it in the equity market. I mentioned last time that if you are in, you do want to take occasional exposure to equities, and you want to buy the big seven, you know, get into the QQQs. That's an easy way to get in and out if you want to do some trading and you see the market selling off and you think it's a buying opportunity. The other one that we've been doing a little bit of that with on the edges is IJR, which is basically the Russell Index, Russell 2000.
No, you use that one, and we use the IWM.
Yeah. And it's just a way of gaining exposure when those markets get hit. BTI is one that's going to be a little less risky. The Vanguard Total Return Index, which covers global bonds, it has it's probably the largest index global equities. It covers the largest index of equities, and that's a way to gain exposure if you want a little bit of your portfolio there and a little bit of exposure. You're afraid of missing out, but my advice is keep that exposure minimal, especially if you're living on a fixed income, and absolutely if you're at or past retirement age.
Dan, do you have I know you, even though you're a fixed income guru, you do some of the stuff on the equity side. I don't have the people that I mean it's a PTI, but. My brother does a lot of stuff with people who do some of their own stuff, and most of the people I manage, I do pretty much everything for them. But I lean into the Qs, Spiders, and the Russell as being they're most liquid. So if I have to do something on a daily basis, I'm paying very little in terms of bid-ask spread to get in and out. But Danny has a lot of guys that favor some of the sector indices, and I'm not talking about there's a gazillion indices. We pretty much stick with the what do you want to call them, the little spiders. If you look at the SPY, there's probably there's like 11 indexes now. So they broke one up. It's like 11 indexes that if you bought them all, they add up to the spiders. He has a lot of people that trade those. He has a lot of clients that like this XLV. We didn't recommend it, but they like being in healthcare, and it's been an okay performer. I'm not saying nothing's been as good as the high tech, but. It's been okay. I mean, do you like XLE? The oil is kind of down here at 72. Do you like any of these?
I think both healthcare and energy are two sectors that have upside value. Being more of a value manager, kind of looking for what's down and out. I would be going there more than to the overpriced tech names or the overpriced biotech names. But that being said, just be really careful. I'd be very cautious on the basic materials, very cautious on retail. I'd be out of retail altogether. Utilities are okay.
What do you mean? Target was up 15% yesterday.
Right, and I'm trying to think of a name that was down 15% recently.
Macy's,
right. Yeah, so we've had, it really depends on specific names. And also, what I notice is in that industry, if you've been following like Home Depot, Lowe's, and some of the other retailers, that there's been volatility. There's been good quarters and not so good quarters, and good news.
But Home Depot does nothing but good up. They're a monopolist. They're not a retailer.
Yeah, but it's still you want to get specific with a smaller company. You just have to really get to know management, and that's what we do. We meet with the management teams before we invest. There's still several that I think are fantastic, but we also got to look at where we are in the cycle, and in the stock market cycle. And if we were to start losing liquidity, we have a lot of liquidity right now. But if we were to start losing it, the smaller names are the ones that get hit first, and you just have to be very careful.
Dan, we
about
got
that.
A dash. What are you? The one I one of the my weaker ones and. You and Greg, the banking guys have been pretty strong lately, but every time we had a lot of clients at one time and were in the XLF, I found it hard to do any rolls in there. You couldn't roll up and out, and the XLF is the banking piece of the S&P. I mean, I suppose I'd put people in it if I really thought it was a buy. I don't know. I'm kind of neutral on it here. Where are you?
I think banking and financial services in general, I mean, they're, you know, where we are with interest rates, it's actually a good time. They have a spread finally that they can make money on. But I'll also say that they're some of the most difficult companies to analyze.
That's what I mean. I can't get a feel for them.
It's very hard to get your arms around them. They're just it's just an industry that's very difficult, and I wouldn't necessarily be chasing it.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 73. Anxious to see you in September.
Yes.
Always a good time. Hopefully the weather will be like this. I mean, it's pretty darn nice. Last few days are pretty darn nice.
Yeah.
We're back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg. We'll be back tomorrow. Right. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.